Okay, this is the 24th session in our series of Tarot Explorations of the Laws of Life. Tonight we're focusing on the Law of Adaptation in Time. This is a law that the Tibetan refers to a number of times in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So this is a fairly abstruse law that goes into the basic design of life on Earth and life in humanity. Our question, therefore, is what is the divine law of adaptation in time, and how can the aspirant best harness it? I shorten it to adaptability, but there's a specific concept here of adaptation through time, which presents an alternative explanation to the notion of evolution and the theory of evolution. So I have shuffled the cards and laid them out. And the cards we have that we're working with tonight are, the starting point is Temperance, right side up. Temperance is the 14th card in the Major Arcana, which reduces to a 5. The counterpoint is the 5 of Cups, so we have 2 5s to start off, the Temperance being a 5 and the 5 of Cups being a 5. 5 of Cups is right side up. The challenge is the 9 of Cups upside down. The what? Oh, 9 of Rods. Did I just say 9 of Cups?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was looking at the Knight of Cups over here. And it's actually the 9 of Cups. Nine of Rods is the upside down, is the creative challenge. And the purpose is the Ace of Rods. So you have 2 rods in a row here, which pretty much frames this as a mental issue. And then the endowment is the Knight of Cups, right side up. And the destiny is the Hermit, upside down. And then the Pillar of Revelation, the real question is the Lovers, right side up. That's number 6 in the Major Arcana. I'm sorry, the Hermit was number 9. In the Major Arcana. The Lovers is right side up. The hidden factors or forces is the 7 of Swords, right side up. The spiritual ideal is the 8 of Swords, upside down. And the culmination is the 10 of Rods, right side up.
Upside down.
It is upside down. Okay. I picked it up and put it back down wrong. According to here, it is upside down.
Okay.
So we end up, in spite of the fact that I've misinformed you several times, we end up with 6 upright cards and 4 reverse cards. We have 3 majors, 2 swords, 3 rods, 2 cups, and 0 pentacles, which correctly suggests that this doesn't have a whole lot to do with physical life, although there are applications. This has to do with cosmic energies and mostly above the mean kind of things. The place where I would start here is not with the starting point, but with the end, the culmination. This card, the 10 of Rods, suggests the ability to focus and choose. And this is an aspect of human consciousness that we are meant to develop. The idea behind the law of adaptation through time is that we aren't expected to come down and do our work all in one lifetime. In fact, we're given hundreds of lifetimes and as much time as the soul desires. So the soul will pick and choose different lessons to be learned and perhaps even repeat them in different facets and aspects. And through that process, the soul learns to adapt, and the personality does, whether consciously or unconsciously, learns to adapt to the conditions of life and develop skills that it wouldn't otherwise have, immunities and strengths that it wouldn't otherwise have. And in fact, this law is very useful to us because it gives us insight into how divine energy ends up influencing and invested in the physical life, and we do the work of redemption. It also gives us a fresh perspective on dealing with disease and pain and suffering and limitation. Notice in the Eight of Swords, this is a card of limitation, and this is the spiritual ideal. So we frequently take on handicaps and limitations, a la Helen Keller, in order to learn that we can surpass or surmount, we can overcome the limitation. And that's the strength of the divine within us. And until we have overcome something that we thought was impossible to overcome, we don't have any concept of our own strength. And in fact, in esoteric healing, the Tibetan talks about this very principle in the sense of disease, that most diseases that we face are not caused by our own indiscretions. They are the result of the principle of the sharing of ancient evil. And the problem, for example, right now, down here in the South, all the trees are budding up and bursting forth in glorious display, and with that comes incredible levels of pollen. Yesterday, our pollen count was 800, which is considered high. A week ago this time, it was 8,000, which is astronomical. And so people who never get allergies have allergic reactions during all this, because it's just part of confronting whatever the overdose of pollen is. It's an overdose. It's not a punishment or anything like that. And so we get to share in that, but the result of that is we develop what he refers to then as, let me see if I can find this. Maybe not. He refers to it as the ancient law of evil sharing must someday yield to a new law of ancient dominating good, which lies at the core of everything that God has made. So we come here to learn to harness the ancient law of dominating good, the good that dominates the imperfection, the ill health, the disease, the limitation, and find that we can overcome this. So this is the law of adaptation. And we must resist anything rigid and learn to get happy feet. This is why I put up this illustration, which is known as a harmonograph. It's an artist's concept of the rotary motion expressed fifth dimensionally, if you wish. And so the rotary motion in any idea is such that it causes us to entertain different ideas and different approaches. And part of this is we have to accept the fact that any given lifetime is limited. Even as you gain access, we'll go through all this as we go through the spread, but even as we gain access to the wisdom of divine life, there's only so many ways that we can apply it in the finite circumstances of any one given life. So we should expect there to be parallels and continuations from lifetime to lifetime, and not take our own limitations, diseases, and handicaps quite so seriously as many people do, thinking, oh my God, I'm being punished for this. Not even taking our mistakes all that seriously, because after all, it's a known fact that we're going to make mistakes, all human beings do. And we need the ability to look at our mistakes with gentle laughter and good humor and say, oh, what a fool I've been as a mortal. Oh, what fools we mortals be. And Rose and I have been rereading a wonderful book that was a selection of the Books of Light book club 20-some years ago, Harry Turtledove's The Case of the Toxic Spell Dump. It's no longer in print, but we managed to find, through Amazon, we managed to find a copy of it in England, and it was shipped to us. Cost us much less than the original book did, or maybe not, maybe it did. Probably the book wasn't too expensive. No, we paid about $1 less than we did originally. Anyway, I'm not going to go through the whole plot, but there's been a fire in a monastery and a spirit that kept the library there almost perished, even though he didn't have a physical body. He almost perished in the fire. And when he finally comes around and regains consciousness, the main character says, "The fire crew and constabulary rescued you," I said. And the spirit replies, "Exactly so. At the time and since, I have doubted whether they did me any great favor. But as with my betrayal of you, the deed is done, and we must now proceed to act upon its consequences." The great power of that sentence is, "The deed is done, and we must now proceed to act upon its consequences." If we understood that, for better or for worse, the decisions we've and the actions we've taken in the past represent a deed that is done, and now we act upon the consequences, even though it's done, it still lives on, and we are able to adapt to its consequences. And we must start to see those patterns in our daily life and understand that we're not meant to see these things as punishment, but as opportunities to expand our service. So, with that in mind, let's sally forth here and go back to the first card, Temperance, number 14 in the Major Arcana. And Temperance, of course, is an angelic force that demonstrates the value of purity in expressing, transferring divine force into form. Now notice an enriching life on earth. So this is irradiation of matter with spirit, which is our work here on earth. Notice something very important, and that is the bottom of the card, the bottom half of the card, there's all this purity up top in the various blue triangles there at the throat. But immediately below that, there's a pyramid of honeycombed design. And it's as though the work of spirit is to develop that honeycombing so that the essence of spirit can then register and build in that. And the image that comes to mind is my grandfather many, many years ago, almost 100 years ago, was a chemist. And in the First World War, he was tasked with coming up with improvements on gas masks so that the soldiers in the field would not be killed by exposure to toxic gas. And he did this and invented activated charcoal, which takes the substance of the charcoal shells and then exposes it to intense heat, and that creates honeycomb patterns within the molecules of the coconut shell. And these molecules then are capable of collecting huge amounts of toxic materials, whether they're gases in lethal gases in the battlefield, or smoke from cigarettes, or just the toxic byproducts of manufacturing. And activated charcoal traps these odors and fluids and whatnot in that honeycombed capacity. And so the capacity of just a thimbleful of activated charcoal can purify air for a large quantity of air for months. And this is before it has to be cleaned out and disposed of. You can rejuvenate the charcoal then and reuse it. This was a great invention, which is basically in line with this, because it takes matter and expands it tremendously, so its potential for usage is greatly expanded from what it was before. And that's what we're supposed to do. through our inventiveness and our innovativeness. And but that doesn't happen just all in one experiment. It often takes many lifetimes to come to that capacity. But as we develop our capacity for love and goodwill and humor and joy and all of these different things, we create a honeycomb effect in our character, which, even if we're not aware of it, gives us depth and resonance that permanently transforms and transmutes the physical plane, and our work gets done. So, and quite often this is in the context of we see something imperfect in our own character and we decide, aha, I need to improve that. And so we focus on self-discipline, we focus on purifying ourselves, and in the process of that, we create this honeycomb in our subconscious, in our character, which of course goes a long way then to healing mass consciousness, these poisons and toxins as they accumulate in mass consciousness, fear. As we confront our own fears and our own worries, we as disciples or aspirants, we may fidget over, fuss over these things and wish that we were more perfect. But in fact, we're doing what we're supposed to do perfectly. We're reaching up for divine strength and purity and trying to use it to control our own personal reactions to life. And in the process, we're purging and purifying huge amounts of fear and worry and negativity and jealousy or whatever it is in mass consciousness. We don't have a clue that that's happening, but this particular card, Temperance, suggests that the divine law of adaptation and time, one way of looking at this, the time is the key word there. We all know how to adapt to changing conditions. And in fact, as we grow older, we become more and more, we have to become more adaptable because our rigidness sticks out blatantly. And many older people do become more rigid, but as aspirants, we recognize the bane of rigidity and its limitations. And so we have to overcome the increasing rigidity of the physical form, whether it's in arthritis or just a loss of stamina and strength and whatnot. We can't do what we found easy to do 30 years ago or 40 years ago. So again, it's not the adaptability that we need to refine so much as projecting it through time. And Rose and I went down this afternoon and picked up the proof copy of The Unfortunates Through the Gates of Death from the printer, so it'll be ready in a few days. And we will ship it out to everybody who's bought it, and maybe in a few people who will buy it in the next day or two. But nonetheless, in this wonderful little book about death, the Unfortunate says that after the time of death, the individual reviews his or her life and does it backwards, in backward sequence, starting with the most recent things and going back to the beginning. And this is part of the law of adaptation in time. If you've read very much in Alice, the writings of the Tibetan, you'll know that, for example, in esoteric astrology, he suggests that our conventional way of thinking that we move through the zodiacal year needs to be reversed, that we don't go from Aries to Pisces, we go from Pisces to Aries. And of course, we aren't used to thinking that way. But there's a subtle hint here, and that is that the subtle hint is that motion on the physical plane is not what defines our life. It's motion as it occurs on the inner levels of consciousness that defines our life. So it is, we tend to think of the past as being what's in the past, and to the degree that we get trapped in the past and worrying about the past and regretting what we've done in the past, that's a limitation. But if we flip it and start to realize that the real key, our real creative effort is in terms of managing or coordinating the future, and that the future gives us the opportunity to face the consequences of the past and therefore go back and reenact the past so that we've corrected it, then we start to understand something of this adaptation in time. It's kind of like in Babylon 5. Babylon 4 goes back in. Yes. Babylon 5, you've heard me talk about it before. It was a wonderful TV series that is still available on discs through Netflix and other organizations. But part of the plot is that Babylon 4, that was lost shortly after it was commissioned, was taken back 1,000 years in the past and used to defeat the enemy of the present, because they knew what had to be done in order to avert tremendous catastrophe. So this is a symbol of this law of adaptation in time. We can use our awareness of the plan of God to go back in time and work to adjust our capacity to learn from and harness the consequences of previous acts, whether they're our own acts or historical acts. And this is where it's very unfortunate that there's not more awareness of the fall of Atlantis, except in a few mythological sources like the story of Noah's Ark. And of course, what Plato reported, which should be taken seriously. But this is part of the way that we can use this law, understanding the divine plan has set an end result for everything. We go back and see how previous acts build up to this, and then we can go back and adjust our behavior in the here and now to lead more quickly to the desired end result, and not just leave things to chance. So anyway, that's temperance. This speaks to the notion of our work of redemption and healing. It speaks to the fact that we as a being are here to use the physical body and the personality to redeem life on earth. And we should not be weighted down by any sense of doom or destruction, knowing the end result, and that all these forces come to a point in the Ten of Rods. The counterpoint is the Five of Cups, and this is equally instructive. Five of Cups is a fellow, an agent of light, presumably, who is standing by lakeside or riverside or whatever. There's reeds there, presumably the water's on the other side of the reeds. In front of them is three cups that have been spilled. Behind them are two more cups that are not spilled. And usually this is seen to be a loss, a sense of personal loss. But I read it completely differently, and that is that these are the investments, mentally, emotionally, and physically, of what we have in abundance. And you know, we are here to tame the wildness, civilize the wildness, and of the reeds. And so we plant and we cultivate and we build and we create civilization. And this is the way in which we organize life on earth and instill divine economy into our lives through this law of adaptation in time. And we need to see those not as spilled cups, but as active investments, efforts to transform life on earth. We haven't lost anything, we've invested it. And we need to start looking at life as from that perspective nothing ventured, nothing gained. And if it seems like some investment we've made has just been lost, That's an illusion. We've gained something incredibly from it and from the willingness to venture forth and try to improve life on Earth. That's the central skill of consciousness and growth. And very much important in this law of adaptation, because we grow as we adapt to the conditions of life that we find. None of us is coming down into the earth plane either carrying a blank slate or encountering it. We incarnate into a family with traditions, a cultural and racial background. We grow up in a city or a village where there are established customs. We go to established schools. We learn what we need to learn. We enter into the life, the flow of life, with established traditions, cultural limitations, expectations, and so on. And then we adapt to it. We adapt what we know of the divine life and the archetypal life to best respond to what we find right in front of us. And that's what this law of adaptation in time is all about. And we have to recognize, not put limitations on our efforts, but recognize maturely that there's only a certain amount that we can do, that God has control of this whole process, and we shouldn't think that we have to do it all right now, all on our own, and that none of it, we're not getting the help that we think that we deserve. So, with this in mind, this sets the tone. We go to the creative challenge, and this is the Nine of Cups. The Nine of Rods, and the Nine Rods, I don't know why I keep thinking that rods are cups, but they're obviously rods. There is this person here who seems to be stoned, who pondering, yes, surrounded by nine rods, vertical rods coming from heaven to earth, and isn't quite sure what to do with them. This is obviously somebody who is aware of archetypal powers and forces and can contemplate them, ponder them, as Rose just pointed out, but hasn't figured out what to do. He's sitting there saying, well, what can I do? I've prayed, I've invoked, I've done everything I can think of, and they still, these are the divine forces. They haven't changed, but the world around me hasn't either. Well, this is the challenge to the spiritual aspirant, is to find out what you can do to transform the past, the present, and the future. And unless you're transforming all three of those, you're not really engaged in anything of great value. We become an agent of divine force. This is a law that describes how you can best apply divine force in your life. Then we come down to the purpose, the card of purpose, and we have the Ace of Rods. This is an Ace of Rods, a single rod coming up and flowering forth out of the very systematic or artistically defined material at the bottom, the ancient evil, the patterns of ancient evil. And the mind grows in this fertile soil of the problems of the past. And we're not coming down here to improve upon the past. The past is what it is. We're coming down here to recognize the mistakes of the past and try to create something that better reflects the end result in the mind of God. And this is where you come face to face in conflict with tradition, because human tradition is, let's do it the way our grandfathers did it. Whatever was good enough for old grandpa is good enough for me. And we would go all the way back 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 3,000 years, 4,000 years, 10,000 years, 20,000 years, if we could remember it. And yet, what we have to do is understand that humanity has to adapt as evolution cycles through time. And we then come to the endowment, the Knight of Cups. Again, this is a question this is an issue of desire, that much of the problems of the ancient sharing of evil are derived from the desire nature, attachment to form, collectively as a human race or individually. And it's amazing to me, it's a constant sense of bewilderment to me, that people are so committed to defending their own personal variation on the theme. God reveals the nature of a divine archetype to us, and then there are always people who say, oh, I'd rather do it my way, or sing about it. They'd rather do it my way. And this is part of the problem of the criticism of capitalism that I read about this morning. And that is that there's always people who are willing to take pot shots at anything that's successful, because they cringe under the sense of, we got to do it this way. I'd rather do it this way. I think this is better. And even if it's a theory that's never been proven and never actually demonstrated, whereas the divine principles are shown to be true and reliable, they will cling to that and fight against it. This is an absurd proposition of going back and deliberately sharing in ancient evil. We may have no choice but to share in the consequences of ancient evil, but we sure as hell don't have to like it, and we should build up our determination to eliminate it and know that there is a principle of, as I said, quoting DK, the ancient dominating good, the law of ancient dominating good, which lies behind all that God has made. And we should be working this whole law of adaptation in time, is how we as human agents work and cooperate in our own private way to confront our desires and our wishes and apply divine force to transforming them, create the honeycomb that allows us to have a benevolent impact upon mass consciousness. Going from the endowment then to the future, the card of the future is the Hermit, and upside down. And here the Hermit is looking with his lamp, the light of his mind, through the archetypal resources of the divine mind, to try to discover and determine what we're doing in these sessions, and that is defining the laws of life so that he can understand the way to apply divine law to individual situations. And again, as we try to do that, we're going to make some mistakes. There's no question about that. But this is where we tap the future, is by contemplating the end result that God has in mind in any particular line of adaptation and transmutation, evolution. And so we have an idea of what the human mind is meant to achieve. The Tibetan demonstrates that pretty much to a fairly well. And the power of pondering, the power to master and dominate the lower levels of desire and form. And that we are meant to create, maybe perhaps not a paradise on earth, but a life which is free of disease, in which we triumph over limitation and release the abundance of divine life. It's always the inner dimensions of the mind of God that we must explore for these answers. We're not meant to come up with our own answers. We're not meant to fall down and worship the idolatrous answers of other people, whether it's Karl Marx or Friedrich Nietzsche. None of these things are supplements or substitutions for the insight of the divine mind. We are meant to use this as the guideline, the plan, the blueprint for pursuing adaptation in form. Okay, let me pause here and ask for comments and questions before I tackle the pillar of revelation. Any comments or questions? Anybody? Yes.
About your comment with contemplating that end result and knowing, you know, we're moving toward God's plan, that we're moving in that direction. It makes me think about that fits right in with the act of this principle.
Sure.
Think about the end result, and if you set yourself to move toward that, you might not, you know, it's going to take some time, we're going to make mistakes, but you always keep yourself focused on the highest that you can. So
yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
It's a favorite pastime of fundamentalists to emphasize the sinful nature of humanity. And at best, they will say it that nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. We're born that way. That's not exactly true. There's an element of truth in it, of course, but it's not humanity that's born flawed. It's the world in which we are born that is flawed. That's why we come down here, to redeem it. And that imperfection is innate. The error is the ancient evil that we are tasked to redeem. And we have no concept of how that ancient evil was generated. That happens to be a number of solar systems ago, at least one. So and so we have, it's fruitless to try to figure that out. It has to do with clip-offs and clip-ons and coupons and Cupids and well, cupidity, the desire nature. So it's silly to try to concentrate on that, whereas we have an open book in the mind of God that we can go and research the ideal end result. We know about ideals. We know what the ideal of honesty is, even if we haven't figured out how to maintain our integrity moment to moment with purity. We can discover the end result. No point worrying about the origin. We know that it's here, and we know that we have to clean it up. And so we shouldn't take on the burden of sinfulness quite so readily. Yes, we make mistakes. Yes, we make errors. But that's innate in the work we do. The first time we try to solve a problem, of course we're going to make mistakes. The first time I tried to add 2 + 2, I imagine I came up with something other than 4. Because I didn't know the answer. It's by making mistakes that you discover the difference between right and wrong. So there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. Living in the past is a problem. It denies the future. And so the divine law of adaptation is that we're meant to see ourselves as the paraclete that adapts between the past and the future. It leads us out of the past into the future. And that's a tremendous assignment that we find ourselves in the middle of. We don't have a whole lot of clues to guide us correctly, maybe a few more now than 100 years ago. But that's what we're doing here. Other comments or questions? The law of adaptation. Well, let me move on then. We're making very good progress here, adapting these ideas to current reality. The pillar of revelation begins with the lover is in the position of the real question. And so it suggests that we magnetically attract what we require for growth. We magnetically attract it at the level of the soul, and we magnetically attract it at the level of the physical plane. And so and we're going to come up to the Eight of Swords and the traps and limitations. And whatever traps or limitations we seem to be born into, we may be born into a poor family so that we have the motivation to work hard and become self-supporting and wealthy because we don't like the examples we see. That doesn't always work. The comedian Jonathan Winters died about 10 days ago, and in his obituaries it was noted that he was an alcoholic. He was born into a family with an alcoholic father. He never quite conquered that problem on his own in this lifetime. So that was a limitation he took on. And as he cultivated a sense of humor, he had the opportunity to use that sense of humor to cope with his alcoholism. He must have coped fairly well because he lived until he was 87, which is a bonus from normal expectation. But he did keep that to himself, his problems, his personal demons. But that's what we do. We step into a situation filled with limitations. The challenge to us is to figure out how do we overcome this limitation. So the real question is, how do I overcome that which I've drawn to myself? The problems, the forces, the limits, the diseases, whatever it might be. How do I overcome this? These are the outpicturing of my desires, and probably from 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, it's not enough just to burn all these things away. Our challenge is to come up with divine solutions to the problems we confront and not be bogged down in them. And so this is a dynamic of life. No one should... my mother was fond of saying, whenever she wanted to let us off the hook for some problem, our rebelliousness or whatever, she said, "Well, you didn't ask to be born, and therefore it's not your fault that you grew up in this household. We're the ones who took on the responsibility, and by damn, we're going to teach you how to live your life." But in fact, I do remember asking to be born. I'm quite convinced that I asked to be born and to bear the limitations of the family and the community and the racial background and whatnot. And to learn to turn these things to advantage, whatever those things might be, and not see them as disadvantages. So this is the real question is, what are we doing with what we've drawn to ourselves? Are we trying to, are we engaged in self-pity and say, "Oh, I could have been a better person"? You know, Mimi brought up as if, the other one like that is if only. I could have been a really good person if only I had been born with money. I could have been a really good person if only blah, 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 and then you fill in some alibi or excuse. Well, the fact is that you are who you are because of who you are and what you've attracted to you, and you created your own vortex that have drawn these things to you. So that's the real question. What are you doing to transform the negativity or limitations you've drawn to yourself? The Seven of Swords is in the position of unseen forces, and that is, of course, the idea that the soul has a plan for you. And the first thing you have to do is figure out what is the soul's plan and work on that. The soul doesn't try to accomplish everything in one lifetime. It knows it has 500 or 600 lifetimes, and so it's going to take advantage of all of them. And the process of learning to harness divine life is a step-by-step process. and the soul acts with great economy to give us the skills that we need, but we should realize that there are many skills in our toolbox that we're unconscious of, and we ought to explore some of those as well and use them when we confront difficult situations. We then come to the spiritual idea, which I've referred to a number of times. This is the Eight of Swords. The Eight of Swords is a person, male, female, androgynous, whatever, who is tied up, blindfolded, not gagged, but blindfolded and tied up, and stuck in a pillar of salt, or a pillar of ancient evil here, stuck in ruts and limitations. There are four swords on either side of this individual, and that indicates that, again, the resources that are needed to transform life into something better are right at hand. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, but unfortunately, this person's hands are bound up as well as their arms and their shoulders. They're blind to these swords, to spiritual realities, and they're stuck in the mud. They're stuck in physical matter. And that's the story of humanity. We need to understand that this is giving us a slightly different message than it often does, and that is that our best opportunity to expand and discover the unlimited dimensions of life is to accept the limitations that we seem to have been dealt in life and allow ourselves to be trapped by them, and then overcome that limitation. Again, the perfect example of this is Helen Keller, who at the age of 19 months contracted an otherwise healthy child, contracted a rare disease that left her blind and deaf and dumb, unable to speak. And yet she overcame those limitations with a lot of help from Annie Sullivan, and her mind triumphed over this and broke her loose from her fetters. That's the example of what we're meant to do. Any life might start with handicap, but if we take the challenge and overcome our handicaps, overcome our limitations, overcome our poverty, overcome our heritage, overcome the tradition that's been that befell us, we can achieve unlimited. I mean, the fact is that part of our humanity is physical and finite. Part of it is abstract and unlimited. And so if we learn to harness divine force, there's really no limit to what we can accomplish, even if a single lifetime limits us. Life goes on, and the creative process. When I was younger, I always thought that it was a shame that John Keats, such a great poet, died when he was 26. But I understand that his consciousness went on. He didn't die at the age of 26. The person only known as John Keats died, and for good reason, because he had tuberculosis. That was his confrontation of part of the ancient evil. Yet his poetry remains dominant and triumphant today, and his poetic genius remains alive and dominant today. Just not in the body of John Keats. So we must accept that part of this is, we're spirit being born into form. Form by its nature has limitations and restrictions. And so the first thing we should do is learn to define what those limitations, restrictions are, and go, ooh, ha, 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 ha. And release ourselves from this indentureship, from these bonds that would tie us down. Triumph over them. That's the spiritual ideal, the ideal of triumph over limitation. And then that is one of the secrets of divine abundance. This then brings us back to the culmination, the Ten of Rods, where we started. And this is, again, the ability to focus our mind and make choices so that we, armed with divine life, these are the same rods that we see in the Nine of Rods and in the Seven of Swords and the Eight of Swords. We harness these, we gather these forces, and we apply them to the specific work that our finite focus in this finite personality provides for us. And that's what lets us do it with impersonality. It's God's work. It's God's glory that we're here to perform. We are an agent of divine life. But we focus on that specific point. And in doing that, we achieve the use of the law of adaptation in time. And we accept the restrictions of this one lifetime and overcome those limitations and thus enter into the infinite. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions. I think this is a very important law to understand because it releases us from so much of the superstition and bad theology associated with human life. Comments? Questions?
Well, I've just appreciated not only the whole law, but I keep looking at this card of temperance too, and your talk about the activated charcoal and this honeycomb that you see right here on temperance. It really is a good depiction of how we're that system of transmuting and distilling any negativity. And it really is what helps us develop into the divine, return to the divine beings that we are to be and keep learning. So, I remember too, as I look at this card, it was a long time ago, I think you were saying that if you were going to be either blessing, I know what it was. It was like if you're in a new environment, say you go into a new hotel room or something like that, and you want to purify it. You had mentioned about seeing it as a honeycomb. And I don't know if you remember that you said that, but you had said seeing it as a honeycomb with all the whatever energy, the purifying energy going through it, be it blessing or joy or whatever.
Sounds like something I said. Go ahead. Don't let me stop you.
I remembered that, and I think this card leaves a whole lot to think about, too. It's just that process. That's really, we are kind of like these little factory systems that we're here to transmute this energy and transform life here on Earth. And in the process, we're learning, growing, lifting everything. So.
Sure. Good. Anybody else? Anything? Well, that's it for this session. I thank you all. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks, and we'll see you all, or many of you, hopefully all of you, Wednesday night for the beginning of the emanation of the all-beauteous mind. So, thank you, and good night.